So, welcome to, somehow it seems longer than the second week. Welcome to second week, lecture three, January 24th, 2023. Lecture notes page will be 30. Happy Lunar New Year to you and yours. If you've noticed on my slides, I have a black squirrel running along holding a briefcase to be funny, to be cute, for the College of Business. Over here, I asked one of the new AI artistic things to create a rabbit. I think I said running, but maybe I said holding a briefcase on a white background. So that was generated by an AI for me. I think I'll keep mine as it is. But I thought it was amusing for what they did. Our condolences, of course, to the folks who were involved, survivors of the shooting at the New Year's Lunar event at the dance halls. We're sorry to hear about that, of course. Enrollment's pretty steady, around 560. We'll see how that changes over time. The textbook, or a book, the textbook is available today, from what I understand. Has anybody actually bought the textbook and proved me right? Yeah, so they have it at the bookstore. It's there. Are you saying, yeah? So they tell me that, but I never know if they're telling me right or not. So apparently it is available right now if you want to go buy it. And you stayed with Flashbooks. If you opted out of Flashbooks, you find the book on your own. So tonight, mini test one will close. That covers last week's material from lectures one and two and the accompanying textbook material. If you have issues or problems with that, let me know. But we're moving along towards getting that done. Actually, any questions on that from anybody? Web students? You're not here right now. Anybody have any questions for me about this testing stuff? We good? How many people have taken it? More or less as expected for what it is. I mean, lecture and textbook. Yeah? All right. So this is our Business in the News article for the week. Has anybody had a favorite restaurant in their town or maybe in Kent close on them as a result of the pandemic? Has anybody had that happen? How about some other store that you like? Nobody has any business that went away? Good for you and your businesses, I guess. Anyhow, why your favorite restaurant might still close. Chains weathered the pandemic better than independent eateries did, and they may do better during this upcoming economic slowdown, which we're sort of in right now. Hi. It's all good? Okay. In a country saturated with chains, NPD Group estimates that about 53% of restaurants are still independent. Sort of impressive, given how hard it is to succeed in the restaurant industry. Despite their high failure rate, especially in their first year, the pandemic made being a restaurateur even tougher. About 10% of independent restaurants shut down in 2020, compared to only about 2.5 of those belonging to chains. So chains have an obvious advantage. They may have more money. They may own multiple restaurants in their chain as a franchisee. They may get support from the franchise. So we're seeing a bit about marketing research, a little bit about the continuing influence of the pandemic, competition in the marketplace, and, of course, a bit about business success and failure. The shakeout for mom-and-pop restaurants would have been even worse had many not been able to take advantage of federal assistance. So here's one of the impacts of those external factors we have no control over, CREST factors we talked about briefly last time, competition, regulatory, legal, and political factors, economic, social, and technology. This, of course, is the impact of regulatory, legal, and political factors on our businesses. They gave us loans. We were able to keep running. As fear of COVID-19 infection faded, Americans with ample savings and tired of cooking for themselves ate out with gusto, especially as domestic tourism rebounded and restaurant business grew to above its pre-pandemic levels. That's pretty impressive. But today's slowing economy and tight labor market and changes to how people order have made things tougher for restaurants. According to small business networking firm Alignable, more than half of U.S. restaurants surveyed were having trouble paying last month's rent, up from fewer than a third in early 2022. So again, the impact of other CREST factors, economic factors and consumers changing behavior on business. In this environment, eating out is increasingly about cost and convenience, not necessarily ambiance, which give chains an advantage over independent restaurateurs. What do you look for in a restaurant when you go out? Do you want a quiet environment and, you know, nice linen napkins and an expensive wine menu, or you just want to get in and get out? And what would you want if you were older and employed in the marketplace? Of course, restaurants not only compete with one another, but with far cheaper alternative, cooking at home. However, for many consumers, ordering a meal or even a coffee aren't as much of an indulgence when one considers the value of customers' time, with unemployment at a 50-year low. So sure, I could make it cheaper at home, but man, I got things to do. I'm busy. I want to order out, even though I know it's more expensive. So the utility of time versus the utility of actual money. What's the utility of eating out versus cooking at home? The pandemic forced quick service and fast casual restaurants to become even leaner, so their cost advantage over independents has grown even more. They have slick apps and rewards programs and take advantage of deals with delivery companies such as Uber Eats or DoorDash that give them more favorable terms than what the independent restaurants can negotiate. So your business is adapting to a changing environment. So the question becomes a little bit, what does a struggling restaurant do? Does it go out of business? Does it shut down? Does it have reduced hours? What's it going to do? And this ties into some stuff we'll be talking about during the course, business strategies and pricing, costs, profit, much later. So in the short run, if a firm experiences losses, that is that their total cost is more than the total firm's revenue, what am I, accounting students? You're the only person here that knows what I'm talking about, you know, expenses, costs, revenue, profit. I'm kidding, of course. The firm may continue to produce or shut down. A firm that temporarily shuts down, of course, avoids incurring variable costs, the cost of producing the meal or a good or a service, but it still has to pay its fixed costs. Even if you're shut down, if you're still in business, you still have to pay rent, you still have to pay insurance. There are other costs you still have to pay. So a firm that incurs a short-run loss may be better off continuing to produce if its revenue from sales is greater than its variable cost. If what you are selling, you can get enough revenue to cover the cost of making it, the labor, the parts, the ingredients, and there's still enough money left over to contribute to your fixed cost, rent, etc., maybe you should stay in business and try to get over the hump, even though you aren't making real profit. You're still getting losses, but they're less than they might otherwise be if you simply shut down and waited it out. So the question then is, how is your favorite restaurant doing? What's their business decisions? Timothy Chalamet. How many people know Timothy? Yeah? His next role in a hilarious new Apple TV Plus commercial, Apple TV Plus has teamed up with Timothée Chalamet to show off its original programs and big name lineup in its new branding campaign, Call Me with Timothée Chalamet. So we're seeing a bit about Apple Plus's brand image, building awareness for their lineup, and a bit of humor in advertising, and of course, Timothy is a celebrity, so celebrities in advertising. The campaign video depicts Chalamet falling head over heels for Apple Plus TV, marveling at its works such as Causeway, Selena Gomez, Mind and Me, the Emmy-winning Jason comedy Ted Lasso. Chalamet begins to wonder why he doesn't yet have a role on Apple TV. Let's see the ad if it'll pop up for us.
Wow, Apple. Best picture.
So amazing, right?
Yeah.
I was in 2 Best Picture nominees last year.
Yeah, no, I knew that. You were great.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence. Selena Gomez documentary. Why don't I have a documentary?
Best comedy on TV.
I can do TV.
Severance is weird.
I could do weird. Blackbird.
I guess I could do prison.
What's going on, Jason?
What up, Timmy? I just wrapped my new Apple series, Chief of War.
Wait, you have a new Apple show?
At this point, who doesn't?
Yeah, who doesn't at this point? Like you just said. It's just Sudeikis with a mustache.
Scorsese, DiCaprio, De Niro. The Apple. Call me.
So again, a bit of humor, getting attention for the lineup here. Last January, Apple TV had a hit campaign, Everybody But John Hamm, in which Hamm asked Apple, did I do something to offend you? Because he didn't have any series. But Hamm will soon co-star in season 3 of Apple TV Plus's The Morning Show. So here's their ad campaign strategy, and maybe we'll see Chalamet next on Apple Plus TV. I was going to end it here because I take too much time with these interesting marketing in the news and business in the news examples. I like them. Students like them. I take too much time. And then this comes across my desk, and I couldn't not show it. How many of you guys know M&M's? How many of you guys sort of like M&M's on occasion? How many of you guys like sort of the cartoon characters that M&M's use? They're on hiatus. They've been let go for the time being. It's tough being an M&M spokes candy. M&M says it will replace its iconic spokes candy's mascots with Maya Rudolph after a backlash. M&M announced yesterday it's putting its iconic characters on an indefinite pause and replacing them with actress Maya Rudolph after controversy following its mascot makeover last year. So the company's responding to a controversy. We're talking about celebrities and marketing. And I got to say, normally when we talk about celebrities and marketing, we always ask the question, what's the problem with using real live celebrities? And the answer is you can't control them. They're liable to do something stupid. They're liable to embarrass you and themselves and get themselves into trouble. So it's always better to make up your own character spokesperson, except it looks like you can get in trouble there too. Do you remember me the first day saying marketing, wild, wonderful, wacky, weird? This may fall in that category. Early last year, M&M's gave the mascots more unique personalities and a new look. The brand also introduced a new purple M&M in September, meant to represent acceptance and inclusivity. As part of the makeover, the green M&M's notably changed her knee-high heeled boots for sneakers. The brown M&M, meanwhile, switched her stilettos for shorter heels. So we're positioning the brand to be more inclusive, to appeal more to people. The rebrand sparked a backlash from conservatives, including Fox News host Tucker Carlson, who have criticized the woke M&Ms. Carlson lambasted change in character design last year, saying M&Ms will not be satisfied until every last cartoon character is deeply unappealing and totally androgynous. So here is public response to your marketing effort, and it has impact. The brand said it didn't expect the changes to their spokes candies would be polarizing or controversial. In the last year, we've made some changes to our beloved spokes candies. We weren't sure if anyone would even notice. We definitely didn't think it would break the internet. Being polarizing is the last thing M&M's wanted, since we're all about bringing people together. Therefore, we have decided to take an indefinite pause on the spokes candies. So here is their response to an unexpected, responding to an unexpected response to our marketing efforts. Now, should we take this with a grain of salt? I'm not sure. It's not how clear the pause will last, because the brand just posted a video on social media on Sunday featuring the mascots celebrating the Lunar New Year. I don't seem to have the audio up, but there you go. So that was Sunday. So they're still alive and out there, I guess. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens. If indeed the M&M's public does not approve of their social responsibility efforts, well, then they got to stay in business. They can't be socially responsible if they go out of business. If they still feel it's important to make inclusivity part of their story, maybe they have to do it more slowly or a different way. But consumers have different views. They respond. You have to be attuned to that in your marketing as well. Yes, ma'am. They have a group of people at corporate, we talk about corporate here soon, who are going to make up their minds. They have PR people, they have lawyers, they have marketing folks, corporate executives who have to decide that. And what's that impact going to be on us? And how important is our mission? How important is this to stand up if you think that inclusiveness is important? How important is this to stand up even if it affects our sales, right? So that's a corporate decision, not the frontline marketing folk, and they have to be aware of this, and hopefully they even have to have people planning for backlash events, right? Because you never know when you're going to get some sort of kickback on something that you do.
People plan for backlash?
Oh, yeah. You got, well, I hope they do. So you always have to have emergency response in mind. What's going to happen if? Yep. At a big company. Yep. We good? Okay, so we pick up with lecture notes, page 30, page 16 in the textbook, with a continuation of chapter 1. And where we left off was in an awkward spot, but we ran out of time. We were talking about the various evolution of various concepts of marketing, okay? So we talked about the production concept, the product concept, the sales concept. We got up as far as the marketing concept, where we said this view of marketing says what we're trying to do is discover the needs, wants, and desires of consumers, satisfy them at a profit or to attain organizational goals through an integrated effort within the firm. And that's where we ended off, but there's still more to this little piece. So here is Michelle Skin. Michelle is one of our folk who is one of our video guest lecturers, and her specialty is fundraising.
I can't emphasize enough understanding motivation and understanding what the consumer wants. It is not about the needs of the hospital. It's not about the direction of the organization. It's what's the direction of the consumer? Who's going to use that service? Who's going to purchase that product? And what's their motivation? And how can you tap into that?
So I'm fundraising for a hospital. I have to understand the needs, wants, and desires of potential donors, because if I just want to raise money for a new orthopedics ward and no one wants to donate, I'm not getting anywhere. What do people want to do? Give me some reasons why someone might donate money to a hospital. What might their motive be? Yes, sir. They what?
To enter in a raffle.
It's a sales promotion of some kind. We have this little cute thing going on. You'll win something if you donate. Donate money, you'll win something. So it's a matter of winning a prize.
Your name on a building.
I would like to have the community recognize who I am and how generous I am. I would like to have the Marks Cancer Center wing in the hospital. I'd like my name on that. Thank you very much. Why else? Well, let me come back here. Yes? The hospital saved my child, saved my wife, saved my life. I am so grateful. I want to show that I care. Would you, as a fundraiser, approach each of these three people the same way? No, you'd have a totally different approach based on their needs, their wants, their desires. By the way, another reason to donate is tax advantage. Purely financial, I get a tax break if I donate enough money. What are the needs, wants, and desires? What's the consumer's motivation, whether we're talking about products or, in this case, donating to a hospital? Understanding consumers' motivation is the key. The consumer's wants are the key. And just because you need something doesn't mean they do. So firms must identify and satisfy consumers' needs, and they need to continue to do so because as finicky consumers keep changing what they want, what their needs, wants, and desires are. Plus, competition is always happy to take your consumers and satisfy them better than you are. So competition is going to force you to focus on the consumer, or else it'll take your consumers away from you. Consumers have to be seen in the context of all those environmental factors, CREST factors, competition, regulation, economic, social, and technology. So we have to pay attention to the consumers and all these other factors. We have to have a market orientation as well as a consumer orientation. We're busy people over in marketing trying to keep track of all this stuff as it influences our consumers and our sales, hence our business. The next one, again, I differ from the textbook here a bit, the societal marketing concept as a philosophy. This assumes that customer satisfaction should be delivered in a way that maintains or improves the consumer and society's well-being. Oftentimes, we find that a customer's needs or wants or desires might not be what's good for society at large. What's an obvious product that had been marketed heavily to consumers for a long time that isn't very good for them? Cigarettes, right? And we've seen companies wisely back off of heavy marketing of cigarettes. It's just not good for society. Also put warnings on the package to let you know that you're not doing a good thing. So we're talking about smoking. We're talking about pollution control. We're talking about green marketing so we aren't poisoning the environment, harming the environment. We're talking about things like M&M's trying to be socially responsible by being more inclusive. This then relates to the ethics of doing marketing. Who knows Patagonia? What's Patagonia known for? So what do they sell?
Close to the military.
Second?
Close to the military.
Close to the military. Second opinion on what they sell. Patagonia.
Like jackets and outerwear.
Outwear, jackets, outdoor people. I don't know if they also sell to the military. They might. But to regular, everyday consumers. Anybody have any Patagonia stuff? Just out of curiosity. Okay, lots of us do, right? Patagonia's mission statement says, we're in business to save our home planet. That's not to sell more to the military or to consumers. We're in business to save our home planet. This is the new corporate mission statement of the company. It differs from the previous one that said we want to build the best product, cause no unnecessary harm, use business to inspire and implement solutions to the environmental crisis. Patagonia was led by that statement for over 45 years, but the company has grown into a more integrated firm with a bigger vision, and this necessitates the change of the mission statement to this current one. They are obviously socially responsible in terms of what they are doing. Patagonia is renowned for its true green steps, such as donating 1% of its revenue to environmental causes, for making fleece jackets out of recycled bottles, for going out of its way to use organic cotton, and for mostly powering its headquarters near Los Angeles with solar panels. So obviously they are doing things that maybe they could save some money on if they didn't, but that is socially responsible. I must talk about this later on. Anybody know the latest big story about Patagonia? What they did most recently? Yeah? The owner actually sold the company and put it into a foundation. It's still going to run as a business, but all the profits are going to go to improve the world. That's the extreme of social responsibility. And I thought we had the slide here. I'll talk about it sometime later in the course. The customer relationship philosophy says, look, sure, you have to have a market orientation. Yeah, of course. But you also have to pay careful attention, not just to the customer and their needs, wants, and desires, but the relationship that you have with the consumer. So we have the customer relationship management, CRM is how it's sometimes seen, and pay attention to the customer's experience with the firm. Every touch point they have with you, whether it's in the web, from a brochure, from a catalog, from a customer service call, from a purchase, from a salesperson, has to be an experience that they are happy with, that they're excited about. That's more than just satisfying their needs, wants, and desires. So that's the idea of the customer relationship philosophy. Synergy, marketing and synergy. Managers have to create marketing tactics that fit well together. You can't say one thing on your website and then not have your salespeople have the same mission, motive, attitude. Has to work together. And all of this has to be coordinated. Everything has to come out to the marketplace in the same way at the same time with the same message. Y'all have the advantage of growing up in and going to work in a world of hyper-competition. The competitive advantage that you had when you rolled out last week, last month, last year, doesn't last. Customer satisfaction and competition is going to require you to innovate, to continually get cost advantages, to continue to make appropriate quality enhancements. Have you heard the expression, doing business in an environment of whitewater rapids? Have you heard that expression? Who does rafting? Who's been in whitewater before? It's crazy, right? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on, and if the water's high, you've got to be paying attention, you've got to be going left and right, somebody will fall out of the boat. That's how it is running a business today. It's an environment that lacks stability, that lacks predictability, and requires that managers and organizations continually adapt to change it, to change to actively survive. So you think you're busy as an undergraduate student? Wait till you get operating in a world of white water rapids business. So the good news is that all these changes do create new market segments with new needs. So if you're attuned to the changes, you pay attention to what's going on, you have your marketing staff notice what's going on in the trends, you may have new opportunities to make money. A big term currently in business is marketing agility. Marketing agility is the ability to act quickly and efficiently and to act quickly on those customer insights. Many big organizations are, they use the example of they're like battleships, they're hard to turn around, they're not agile. You can lose market share because you weren't very agile, because you weren't paying attention. So market agility involves balancing chaos and order, ambiguity and speedy decision making, and both short-term and long-term planning. What's going to happen now? What's going to happen in 6 months or a year? Marketing also relies on cross-functional decision-making teams. I think on day one I said, yeah, I know there's all those other departments, but I'm a marketer, I'm focused on me, but I'm being a little facetious there. We have to work with everybody within the organization. Those cross-functional decision teams are groups of people from different areas: marketing, product, sales, customer success, finance, accounting, all working on a common goal, which is getting that satisfaction to the consumer done. It's an integrated effort of the firm. So with this background, we might ask ourselves, who markets? A better question is, who doesn't market? So manufacturers market, retailers market, service providers market, not-profit, non-for-profit organizations market, government markets, and of course you market yourself, right? You market yourself when you want to get that job. What's the needs of my potential employer? How do I dress? How do I present myself? What should my resume say? You're putting out a promotional piece. You want to get that job or that promotion or date that interesting significant other. You're marketing yourself to these folks in order to satisfy their needs, wants, and desires. What is marketed? All kinds of things. Products, obviously. Services. When we say products, we mean services broadly. Ideas. What we want people to think about. Places are marketed. And, of course, people are marketed as well. So all these things are marketed.
No comment.
So let's take some, pay attention to this next little bit. Ask ourselves, what is being marketed? Who's doing the marketing? To whom are they marketing? Let's see if we can come up with some ideas on these things.
No comment, Scarab.
So what?
Now there's new Define a Lash from Maybelline, New York. Our first clump-free that's longer, sexier, defined like never before.
Tell me more.
Only our flexible brush is shaped to the lash. Only our formula guarantees zero clumps.
Define a Lash.
Now every lash is separated, elongated.
Perfectly defined.
New Define a Lash. The clump-free look that's sexier, more refined.
Water for the village, but there are several villages nearby that could use our new system.
Introducing GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Simple, high-definition group video conferencing that will change the way you work. And perhaps a whole lot more. Visit GoToMeeting.com and sign up for your free 30-day trial.
How many letters?
Five letters.
Just think about what am I doing right now. Smile.
Texas travel information, go to traveltex.com or call 1-800-888-TEXT.
What's this election about? It's about the people who built this country.
What's Biden done for working families? Nothing. Sold us out with NAFTA, now weakly selling us out with China. Trump, say what you want, but he has our backs. Increased our take-home pay, gave us better trade deals, playing hardball with China, bringing jobs back home. Trump, he's put American workers first.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
The chief actuary of the Social Security Administration just released an analysis of Trump's planned cuts to Social Security. Under Trump's plan, Social Security would become permanently depleted by the middle of calendar year 2023. If Trump gets his way, Social Security benefits will run out in just 3 years from now. Don't let it happen. Joe Biden will protect Social Security.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Okay, so what's one thing we saw being marketed? Yeah. Makeup, which is, in our category of things, a product. To whom? To consumers. By whom? The market, the manufacturer. So here we have B2C, business to consumer, marketing of a product, which is what we're just talking about. What's another thing we saw? Yeah. Do not text and drive. If you're texting, you're not driving. And what is that in our category of things? It's not a product.
Like an idea.
It's an idea. So presumably government to consumers. Yeah?
Video call software.
The video call software, not a product, but a
service,
thank you, from business, I think, to businesses probably is who they were focused on. What else we got left? We got one more left. Two more left. Let me get something else. What else? What was the last one? Cute music. What is it? Travel. So what are we marketing there? A place. Obviously, probably government again to consumers. Yeah. And people. The last set of ads in an election cycle. We're marketing people. Aren't there ideas here too? Well, yes, but that's not the focus. They're trying to get their person elected. So obviously, I seem to have a lot of government there, but government to, or at least organizations to consumers, to voters, yeah? So, people and places and ideas and products and services marketed from a variety of entities out to a variety of target audiences all the time. We see it all the time. So, here's manufacturer, just restating what we said. Manufacturer Maybelline, selling a product. Consumers, B2C. Provider of go-to meetings, a service to businesses, B2B, PSA idea, either business to consumers or government to consumers, the place, probably government to consumers or maybe business, and people and ideas. So all that stuff is happening. Well, if all that is happening, we might ask a question, who's doing the buying? And of course, we've sort of already touched on it. Organizations, to wit, businesses, buy. And what's the other big market we should be able to guess? Us, consumers, right? So those are the two big entities that we're going to think about as markets for our product, either businesses, B2B, or the ultimate consumer, y'all, B2C. Here's an interesting question. Why buy? Why do consumers buy stuff? Well, they must get benefits. So remember from micro, we're still talking about utility in the marketplace. Is that still a term we're using in micro? Utility, thank you. So marketing creates utility. Utility is the satisfaction or the value or the usefulness that a user receives from a good or a service. That's at the high level of why we buy. We got something of value. So how many guys like ice cream? How many guys like Ben and Jerry's ice cream? All right. So... form utility, Ben and Jerry's terms, cream, sugar, and milk into ice cream. Anybody ever make ice cream at home the old-fashioned way? You did. How, for those that don't know, because we didn't have very many hands going up, how would you make ice cream at home? How's that even possible? What do you do?
I don't even remember the whole thing.
Okay, what part
we
do you remember?
Like a bag.
Okay.
Ice in the bag.
Ice in the bag.
Salt in the ice.
Salt.
And then you put like your cream and stuff in it.
Cream, okay. Like 5 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
More like 45 minutes or longer. takes a long, long, long time to turn it into ice cream, yeah? Hey, I want some ice cream. Is that what you want to go do? Find the salt, find the ice, find the ingredients, shake it up for 45 minutes or an hour and 45 minutes to make ice cream? No, that's not what I want. I would pay somebody to do that for me. How about Ben and Jerry's? They've already done it for me, right? That's worth something to me. It gives me value. Place utility. How many guys, here it comes, don't miss it. Ding, ding, ding. There went the ice cream truck. You missed it. How many guys had ice cream trucks in your neighborhood when you grew up? Anybody still? Yeah. So that's one way of getting it to you in terms of place. So an ice cream truck brings yummies to your neighborhood or Walmart or the grocery store or the gas station sells ice cream. I would like the thing where I want it. Where's Ben and Jerry's plant, or at least where's their headquarters? Where is it? Vermont. How would you like to have to drive to Vermont every time you wanted some ice cream? That's stupid. How about you bring your ice cream to me so I can buy it where I want it? That's worth something to me. Place utility. Time utility. I want the thing when I want it, not when you're ready to sell it. I want it when I want it. Your Walmart Supercenter is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You can get ice cream any time that you want it. Let's see, fashion students, when do consumers want swimsuits? No fashion student has any idea when a consumer, web students, when might, huh? What's the answer? In the summertime, right? So do we wait to make our swimsuits until June and July? When are we making swimsuits? We're making swimsuits in the fall for next season. I don't want to buy a swimsuit when you're making it. I want to buy it in the summer. So you're manufacturing it, you're inventorying it, you're storing it, you're shipping it somewhere, it's being warehoused again until finally you get it to me when I want it. It's not worth much to me to buy my swimsuits in December unless I'm going on a little vacation. But so time utility makes it available when I want it. And possession utility. Consumer value is created by helping them to take possession of the object, by allowing easy transfer of a product's ownership through time payment, through leasing, through providing credit, accepting credit cards and debit cards. These are all strategies that can be important in making a product more attractive to consumer. If you bought a new car, you probably did not pay cash up front for it, unless you were wealthier than I am. So they want you to be able to buy it, and they don't want you to have to wait and save up all the cash. They'll give you credit. They'll give you a loan. They'll give you terms, right? That is helps possession utility. There they are with their credit card. So consumers buy because they get value. They get utility across these various dimensions. And to not have those things would be Looney Tunes. How would you live your life? I want coffee, I got to drive to Brazil. I want ice cream, I got to drive to Vermont. I mean, it's just silly on the surface. So this is just a general comment. The role of the chief marketing officer, if you're interested, there's more info out there about marketing and marketing officers. So we do get to the next chapter. Chapter 2, Strategic marketing. That doesn't seem like it's chapter 2. Thank you. So we're on lecture notes, page 34, developing successful marketing and organizational strategies. I think I mentioned last week, maybe I didn't, that we're going to start here at the 30,000 foot level above what frontline marketers do. So we're going to take a look at corporate and strategy and mission, and we're going to work our way down. We might get to the 10,000 foot level. In this course, I don't get into the weeds. I'm not going to tell you how to sell more widgets to teenagers in Akron, Ohio. We do have folks that can help you with that. That's what we're doing here. We're more the concept level stuff. So we're starting at that 30,000 level and working our way down to that more frontline stuff. So successful marketing and organizational strategies. How many guys remember a company called Kodak? They used to be massively big. They're smaller today. Kodak is synonymous with photography. Their print processing methods were global and technologies ahead of the competition. However, the company ultimately came crashing down because it did not change its strategy with the market. Pay attention to the trends. Watch what's going on in technology. See what people want. Make changes as appropriate. Nah, we're photography. We make film. We're good. Kodak invented the digital camera in 1975. Really? Even though they produced a report on predicted future trends in the market, management decided that the technology really wouldn't disrupt the market. So strategic change was unnecessary. Who wants digital? You can get some good film. Print it out. It'll look really great. Digital, sure. They had 10 years to act, but didn't. The company lost 75% of its value before they filed for bankruptcy in 2012. Your strategy is important. Paying attention to changing market and consumer needs, wants, and desires is important. This is a major firm. You would say, aren't they on top of this? No. GM is ushering in an electric era with ambitious brand refresh and inclusive marketing campaign. GM's new strategy is to position the company for an all-electric future by building a multi-brand, multi-segment electric vehicle strategy with economies of scale, reduced complexity, and significant flexibility. To support the GM strategy, they debuted a new marketing campaign called Everybody In. It's meant to reflect a movement that's inclusive and accessible. The company is also evolving its brand identity as GM transforms itself to deliver on a vision that creates a world with zero crashes, zero emissions, and zero congestion. That sounds good. They have redesigned their brand logo, featuring lowercase letters in an underlined M and a more vibrant blue hue to evoke the clearer skies of a zero-emission future. Ads included in Everybody In mirror the thematic motif of positivity as a diverse cast of narrators share lines like, "We emit optimism, not exhaust."
We are Generation E.
United.
Not by age.
We want smart,
clean,
and safe.
To also be fun, easy,
and powerful.
Oh, damn!
Nobody will be left out.
Well, that was pretty quick. But you get the point. They're inclusive. It's for everybody. No one will be left out. While the Everybody In messaging will be a key part of GM's marketing, individual brands owned by the automaker will stay focused on their own outreach strategies. These ads are about the corporate brand. They're at the position that maybe Kodak was after a few years into the digital revolution. We're several years into the electric vehicle revolution. Will they make the change? It looks like they're trying to be successful in the future. Or will they be out of business because they didn't make the change? They probably will make it. So strategic planning is what we're about. That famous entrepreneur and businessman Ben Franklin said a few years ago, by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. No plan, what are you doing? Oh, okay, you're probably not gonna be successful. The Cheshire Cat, another famous entrepreneur, if you don't know where you want to go, then it doesn't matter which path you take. Well, it does matter which path you take, because where you want to go is be successful, keep up with changing environments, satisfy consumer needs, wants, and desires through an integrated effort of the firm. Corporate strategy is used by all firms, whether we're talking about profit firms, not-for-profit firms, manufacturers or services, entrepreneurs, or a global corporation. It's the organization's long-term course of action designed to deliver a unique customer experience compared to the competition while achieving its goals. This is what we are. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to deliver. GM has a strategy where they're going to have one common platform at the base of all their cars, and the car bodies and styles will change. They're going to try to satisfy people that way. We'll see how it goes. So marketing strategy has to exist within corporate strategies. So marketing strategy involves, within the definition of your corporate strategy, selecting and analyzing a target market, a group of consumers to focus on, and creating and maintaining an appropriate marketing mix, 4 P's of the marketing mix, product, price, promotion, to deliver that unique customer experience, which we just talked about, while achieving the organizational goals. Do you want to market your brand new, do you want to innovate a brand new exploding piton that blasts itself into the rock side and gives people a safe way up, but leaves pitons all over the rock side, pretty much spoiling the environment if you're Patagonia. No, consumers might want that, but we don't want to do that. It'll be a mess. No, we don't want to do that. What's consistent with your organizational goals? Whether you're a profit or a nonprofit organization, you need to have a strategy to set your direction and to achieve your goals. If you don't have a strategy, you don't know who you are, what you're doing, why you're in business, what's going on? What's your strategy? This complicated looking chart is one we'll return to again and again and again during the course. It sort of lays out things at the 30,000 foot level, company mission and objectives, down to that 10,000 foot level, developing the marketing mix. Right now we're talking about the marketing strategy, but it's got to exist, of course, under that higher level thing of the corporate strategy. Who oversees all of this within organizations? Well, in a big company, you're going to have a board of directors. Entrepreneurs sometimes have boards of directors too. They're going to be involved in developing the corporate level strategy. Then we're going to get down to the business unit level strategy. So you might have one strategy for one brand that you own, another strategy for a different brand that you own. You may have different strategic business units, but we're looking at one of those. And that drives us down to what the functional level strategy will be for information systems, finance, research and development. Oh, all right, that's the C level. That's the SBU level down here at the department level. Information systems, finance, research and development, marketing, manufacturing, human resources. So we start down here and presumably want to work our way up the corporate ladder to be a successful C-level entity, perhaps. So organization, corporate level, the C-level. CEO stands for? Chief Executive Officer. CFO? Chief Financial Officer. CMO? Chief Marketing Officer, okay? Top management at the corporate level sets and directs the overall strategy for the firm. They give us our marching orders given the organization. Now, if you're an entrepreneur who is the CEO, CFO, and CMO, you, probably. You're running the business by yourself. Strategic business units. These are, in big companies, a division of the company, or a product line within the company, or a profit center for the organization that sells to a distinct set of products or services to a specified target market against well-defined competition. If I'm Sherwin-Williams, and I'll just be really simple here, it's way more complicated, I have one strategic business unit that sells to businesses. I have a different one that sells to consumers. They may have different missions, they may have different focuses, they may have different goals. And then within the one selling to business, I may have one selling to original manufacturers of cars and one selling to tractors. I mean, there might be different things within that. But these entities sell a distinct set of products or services to a specified target market against well-defined competitors. Here's the organizational structure for Procter & Gamble. Where's Procter & Gamble headquartered, please? Procter & Gamble? Cincinnati, Ohio. Thank you. So a local company operates through five industry-specific business units or strategic business units. Baby care products, feminine and family care products, beauty products, healthcare products, grooming products, and fabric and home care. Within these, they manage 10 product categories. So you can see how doing strategic planning can get complicated across various businesses, various audiences, various target markets. So feminine and family care, beauty, healthcare, grooming, fabric and home care, across global, across the world, and we have one focus on market operations, another focus on enterprise markets as well. So these are one view of strategic business units that we have to focus on. So these guys operate in markets that have different sizes, different growth rates, different opportunities and threats out there, different competition, and different profit potential. So my goodness, once again, marketers have to be busy. High-level marketers, Planners need to be knowledgeable about those in doing their planning. They have to be knowledgeable about these in allocating their resources and in performing evaluations. For example, we've heard a couple times now from Don Kosek over at Time Warner Business Services, who's now Spectrum. They operate 5 business units: Spectrum Residential, Spectrum Business, Spectrum Enterprise, Spectrum Reach, which is ad and sales and production, and Spectrum Networks, their news and sports entities. So they have a variety of strategic business units that they have to focus on as well. Don was part of their Spectrum Business SBU. Down to the function or department level. So strategy can be made at 3 levels. The corporate level, it's going to give our overall guidance. The strategic business unit level under the corporate. And then down to that frontline entity, the functional or department level. So what do marketing departments have to do? Listen to the customer, an external focus. Figure out what their needs, wants, and desires are, and figure how to create things of value to satisfy those customers. Again, within what the corporate strategy is, implement those marketing programs, execute them, make sure they're working out there, and then backtrack over it all. Were we successful? Did we get the profit we wanted? Did we get the sales we wanted? Did the commercial work the way we wanted? So evaluate the program's success. You good? Otherwise, I just move right along. This is just another view of what's going on. So levels of strategic market planning. Your organization hopefully has some core values. Again, you know who you are. You know what you stand for. Not everybody is socially responsible. That may not be why you're in existence. That helps drive your organization's mission or vision. If you're big enough to have strategic business units, that drives their goals. That drives down to the marketing department strategy and out to the marketing plan. So just another view of what I've been talking about. Your core values have to drive your mission and your goals and your plans. Otherwise, you're just willy-nilly. You're just wandering in the dark. You don't know where you're going. You don't care. You aren't really running a business. So the mission statement itself should be a clear and succinct representation of the enterprise's purpose for existence. It should incorporate criteria addressing concepts such as the moral and ethical position of that enterprise, its public image, the target market, the products and services, the geographic domain, and the expectations of growth and profitability. Not all mission statements will do that, but that's an ideal mission statement. The intent of the mission statement should be the first consideration for anybody that's evaluating or making a strategic decision. Really great idea. We have this thing for these blast-in-the-wall pitons. Man, it's going to be fantastic. Boom! It's going to be that wall forever. Wouldn't that be great? But it doesn't really fit in with our environmental view of the world. Maybe we shouldn't do that. Who went for a company that gave their mission statement on a little plastic card that you carried around? Anybody have that? Nobody's worked for a company that gave out their mission statement? Wow. So in some organizations, they do that. They print up their mission statement on that little card. You're supposed to carry it around, know what the mission statement is, so you know what's driving your everyday life, your decisions, and help you to evaluate, make decisions as time goes on. Here's Nordstrom's mission: to continue our dedication to providing a unique range of products, exceptional customer service, and great experiences. Such mission statement perfectly describes its company spirit of going above and beyond what consumers expect. It also states how Nordstrom is not just a simple retailer like, say, Walmart. It is and has always been a high-end business that prides itself on offering its customers exceptional experiences. Does it cover every element of what a mission statement should? No. Would it help its employees to see what they should be doing, to see how they should be interacting with the consumer, to seeing what sort of products they should be buying and purchasing? I would say yes.
Don't they like pride themselves on having a 90-day return policy?
That would be part of the 90-day return policy?
There's
say again?
No return policy?
Forever.
Forever.
I know that that's what it once was.
Yeah, but I worked there.
Okay, I knew what it once. I didn't know it was still there. Thank you for that update. So Nordstrom says, as part of a great customer experience, we trust our customers. We trust them not to be ripping us off. But even if they are ripping us off, we're still going to respect them.
Wow.
You can return anything at any time for any reason.
Literally.
So there you go. And we accept it back with a smile, do we not? All right? So, here we are with the company mission objectives, driving the entire organization and what they're doing.
It's a fairly recent.
So let's go over and look into a B2B world over at Timken Roller Bearing down in Canton, and hear what their view of mission is.
It's a fairly recent vision. Going back even 10 years, our mission vision was worldwide leader in bearings and steel. Okay, so it kind of put us into a box of bearings and steel in terms of what we could do and where we could expand into. And our new mission vision is improving customer performance. And what that allows us to do is think outside of the box in terms of whether it's service or product. What can we offer the customer that will improve their customer performance? And so that has led to an expansion of our product line and our service capabilities just in the last 10 years that, you know, 109 years ago at the beginning of the Timken Company would have never dreamed we would tackle. The one thing that's interesting about that is we've also amended that vision to say, we will provide value for those customers that are willing to pay for the value we create. And what that does, it looks out for the shareholder and says that, you know, we are not going to enter industries and service customers that where the value proposition is all about reducing cost of our product, because we found those industries and those customers, we don't earn a return on our capital. And so in the main, we focus now on those customers and industries that are willing to, the way we put it, pay for the value we create.
We make high-tech roller bearings. You can go buy some cheap thing from somewhere else. Is that going to serve your client, your customer, well? When this change occurred, I was teaching in the executive MBA program, and one of the people in the class, their company was a client of Timken. And he said to me, I don't understand what they're doing. They're not paying much attention to us anymore. I said, well, how does your company view roller bearings? Do they view it as an integral part of their product that's really important to satisfy their customers? Or for your company, is it sort of a commodity? He said, well, it's basically a commodity. I said, well, there you go. Under their new mission, they'll service you, they'll sell you product, but they're not going to go out of their way. You're not somebody who really is respecting what they're doing, creating these high-value, important roller bearings for the company. I don't know if we didn't have this conversation, if I said to you, a company has a mission to be the worldwide leader in bearings and steel. I don't know if you would say that's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. You'd say, okay, that sounds like a driver. That sounds like it's good. But you can see the problem. Turns out it puts them in a box of only thinking about bearings and steel. Turns out that they found that they could provide maintenance service, which they'd been doing for free, for customers. You're running a wind farm with these massive windmills. What's it cost you if one of those windmill bearings fails? What about something, a bearing in an offshore oil platform? You can't afford to have those things fail. So they woke up one day and said, wait a minute, I wonder if customers would pay for this service of us getting in there, letting them know maintenance is, giving them advance notice, having some sort of software in there. I don't know what they all did. Yes, that's outside of just selling bearings and steel. Gave them a whole new vision of what they were about. Here's Valerie. Valerie sells a service. She sells medical, healthcare things to government organizations. Yep. Thank you. Come on. Speak to me.
Our mission is to provide healthcare and human capital consulting to veterans, service members, and their families. That is our core mission. That is all we do. So if a business opportunity is not in the area of healthcare or human capital, which is benefits for this target market, we don't do it. So what that means is, let's say we're in the market, we're doing this relationship selling where we're talking to our clients and saying, what do you need, what do you need? And they say, hey, we really need an IT system that helps us process data faster. We won't do it because that is not in our mission. That is not in our core target area. That is what we do. We provide healthcare and human capital for these areas. We don't do it if it's not in that area.
And I guarantee you sometime you'll work for a company where there are salespeople, where there are executives, whatever, hear something like, well, we need an IT service, we need to process data faster, and that's not what you do, that's not what your expertise is, and somebody's going to say, okay, we can do that for you, And then you come back and say, how are we going to do that? It's not part of our mission. It's not who we are. You don't do it. Now, should you just walk away from that company? Maybe not. Maybe what you say is, I see what your problem is. We've worked with some IT companies in the past, obviously you're telling the truth here, who've helped businesses like yours to speed up so you can use our systems. Let me give you that information. But you don't say you can do it because it's not part of your mission. You don't have the ability. You don't have the skill sets. You don't have the expertise. You'll be working for a company sometime that does exactly that. And how do you provide customer satisfaction if you can't do what you promised? So your mission has to guide what your business opportunities are. The goals that you have for your organization should be SMART. You probably have heard this elsewhere in management. They should be specific, so you know what it is you're being charged to do. They should be measurable, so you know whether or not you've done it, you've accomplished it. They should be attainable. Anybody ever work for an organization where they give you a goal to do something, sell something, whatever, and it's just, you know you can't do it. It's not possible. Has anybody ever had that happen? Yeah? Is that motivating? Go do this thing that you know isn't possible. It's not going to motivate. Stretch, you can stretch me. That's fine. Have me do a little more. But I can't do that. It's not attainable. That's not motivational. Relevant to whatever our particular mission and situation is, and time-based. How long do I have to get this thing done? Yeah? So when you're down to that level of setting your goals and objectives, they should be SMART. Specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-based. Let's see how this might play out for one of our video guest speakers. At Time Warner Business Services, their goal, as you'll see in a minute, is to keep their business growing 25% per year. That's pretty good growth, by the way, in their region. Yep. I thought I had him talking about that here. Maybe I took him out. So that's specific, measurable, attainable, I presume, relevant to what they're doing, and time-based. We know on an annual basis what we're trying to do. So here we are setting our objectives, goals and objectives based on our company mission and objectives that are going to drive our marketing strategy. Oh, here he is.
We have approximately 20-some thousand customers on the business side. And I believe the addressable market here is about 150,000 businesses or so in our footprint. We actually go up through Erie, PA, too. So we have a little bit of that. So what we look at when we determine growth rates and things like that, okay, how many businesses are out there? Market penetration, where are we built out, passings of some sort, and what can we do to keep growing that business 25% or more per year?
Now, if that's your goal and objective, it's got to be an integrated plan. You can't just say, go do that. You have to have some sort of support for it. So let's look at an ad that might be out there trying to help them expand to businesses in the area.
Cooking for a crowd has never fazed us. It's what we'd love to do. That's why we started our catering business. But finding the right internet and phone provider, we just wanted services we could count on that didn't break the bank. Then we heard about Spectrum Business. Best services, best price, and no contracts. We called them and we were up and running in no time. It was so easy.
Make the right choice for your business. Get reliable internet and voice for less and no contracts from Spectrum Business.
So if you were a small business, you're in their market area, they're trying to grow 25% a year in their area, might this appeal to you? If it's all true, yeah, I might look into that. Helping them, of course, in an integrated fashion to achieve their marketing goals. What are some types of goals we might have? Well, it depends on your situation, your customer, your market, your industry, your time period, your consumers. I can't tell you what you should do, but some level of profit might be your goal. Or maybe your goal is to reach some level of sales in either dollars or units sold. Maybe what you don't want to do is have some percent of the market. I don't know if that's 50%, 20%, 10%, be a market leader. Some level of quality, Nordstrom, high quality. Kohl's, acceptable quality. They aren't trying to be Nordstrom, they're trying to be Kohl's. Customer satisfaction, we talked last time that companies that increase customer satisfaction do better. Efficiency, or employee welfare, or being socially responsible. You could have some combination of these goals. So these are the types of things you might consider as our goals. This was the goals from Portage County Health Services a while ago. For a long time, I thought that was Portage County here in Ohio. It turns out it's like in the state of Washington, not important to the story. When I put this together, by next year, 90% of pregnant women will receive prenatal care in the first trimester. Seems pretty smart. By next year, the percent of teen pregnancies will decrease to 7% or less of all pregnancies. By next year, low birth rate babies will constitute no more than 5% of all live births. So there's some very specific goals for not a manufacturer, but for a service provider in a particular county. As we set our strategic directions for our organization, we got to start from our foundation, from our base, where we are now. So I've cutely called it the 3.5 C's of where we are now. First of all, what are our competencies? Before we go planning a strategy, what are we good at? What do we know how to do? Do we know how to do IT? No, that's not what we know how to do. Maybe we shouldn't do that. Do you know how to do 3D AI store sales? No, or yes. So my half here is, what is your current competitive advantage? What is your USP, your unique selling proposition? Before you start planning into the future, what are you right now? What are your competencies? What are you good at? Who are your customers? What do they want? And how are their needs, wants, and desires changing? But what are you doing to satisfy them? Are they satisfied, by the way, with what you're doing? Good foundational place to start. And of course, as always, you have to keep your eye on those ugly other people, the competition, the guys who want to take your customers away from you if they can. So before we start setting our strategic direction, let's understand where we are now as a baseline. Are we good on the writing? Now, in a crisis situation, and think back a little bit to where all businesses found themselves during the COVID crisis, where we have rapid change, even faster than we're normally used to, marketers need a proactive plan to adjust and adapt how they speak to their customers and to manage their brands and their teams. This, then, is where we engage in scenario planning. What happens in the good, better, best situation? What happens in the less terrible, horrible situation? We should be planning for that. Listen for changes in consumer sentiment and behavior. I thought they'd really like my changes in my spokes candies. I guess a bunch of them don't. Let's be reactive to that. Anticipate the operational impacts of these various environmental situations, and then adapt your marketing plan. People are not coming into my restaurant during the pandemic. Do I just shut down? Well, maybe I can set up a website. Maybe I can take online orders. Maybe I can do curbside service. Maybe I can do touch-free orders, whatever. What's going on in this environment that you can change and be successful with? So, as we think about our strategic directions, we have to ask ourselves, well, where do we want to go as we're setting our strategy? Do we want to grow? Yes. Not always. Often. How? Do we want to sustain? That's our example of our restaurant that's in a crisis mode, that's in a recession. They don't want to shut down. And at least for some time period, maybe based on a loan or based on existing savings, they can continue because they're covering their variable costs and making enough money to contribute to their fixed costs for some number of months. We're just going to sustain till this darn recession goes away. Divest. We're a big company. It's not working for us. Maybe our strategy is get rid of it. Sell it off. Or invest. Do we want to invest more in this interesting new area? One way that we talk about that large companies think about setting their strategic directions across a variety of brands or SBUs is called portfolio analysis. And probably the most well-known version of this is the Boston Consulting Group product portfolio. Across a large amount of research, they decided that there were two really important factors that businesses had to think about. One factor: given your product, given your brand, given your strategic business unit, how fast is that market growing? And the dividing line you can see here is the market growth rate of more than 10% annually a year or less than 10% annually a year. The expression we sometimes use is a rising tide raises all ships. Is that an expression you've ever heard of? But even if you haven't, you can picture it. When the tide rises, all ships go up. Even your marginal store, your marginal outlet, your marginal revenue, a restaurant can do okay when the market is growing and growing and growing. It's raising everybody up. When things are shrinking down and not going so good, those guys don't look so good. Then the other important issue is, how big are you relative to the competition? If you're 10 times bigger than them, you're wildly successful and you have opportunities and options to do things they don't. If you're a tenth the size of the biggest next business competition, you're itty bitty, you're pretty well constrained. So this gives us four quadrants. We won't get a chance to talk to them about them today. But in a high growth market where you're dominant, you have what's called a star. We'll talk about what that is. In a low growth market where you're dominant, you have what's called a cash cow. In a high growth market where you're not dominant, you have what's called a problem child or a question mark. And finally, we have a low growth market and you're not dominant at all, you got yourself a dog. We'll pick up next time with this Boston Consulting Group. Thank you for being here.